Shabooey, everybody, and welcome to this month's free preview of our What a Cartoon Movie for DuckTales the Movie, Treasure of the Lost Lamp. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey. I already said Shabooey. Don't make me say it again. Who is here with me today, as always?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and I have a talisman for a million wishes. You didn't see that coming.
Oh, wow. That sounds all made up and stupid. But yes, thanks for listening. And every month we do a little thing called What a Cartoon Movie. And if you are on the $10 level on our Patreon, you can hear the entire thing. We're going to give you a sneak preview, an extended preview of the episode. But if you want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level. And once you do, get access to 2 years, 2+ years worth of What a Cartoon Movie episodes, between 3 to 5 hours long. That's a lot of podcasts, but also everything at the $5 level. That includes all of our limited miniseries, including the recently started Talking of the Hill season 2, part 1, 11 new episodes of Talking of the Hill waiting for you behind the paywall. And that comes with your $10 tier subscriptions at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Henry, what else is going on at that level?
In that entire back catalog of What a Cartoon Movies, you'll get ones like, if you love us talking about DuckTales, you'll love hearing us talk about both the Aladdin film, which is a better movie than this one, and a Goofy movie. Plus, way, way, way more back in the catalog, as diverse as Akira from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We cover the whole gamut, over 100 hours of exclusive podcasts at that premium $10 level with a new one each month. In April, you're going to want to hear our talk about Shrek. Oh, my God. We're going to have a lot. It's two double doses. We had so much fun talking about Treasure of the Lost Lamp in our grousing about it, but we had a lot of fun.
Yes, and the Shrek episode might be 8 hours long. Who knows? But you can find out.
Yes, yeah. So please sign up for it all at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
So yes, that has been our little spiel up front. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy this free extended preview of our What a Cartoon Movie episode for DuckTales the Movie, Treasure of the Lost Lamp. So we covered the history of both Scrooge McDuck and the DuckTales show before this. So if you want to hear this for yourself, please look up the April 29 episode of What a Cartoon, all about the DuckTales episode, Back to the Klondike.
What a classic, man. The first animated one they did. Too violent for our American eyes.
It's true.
But yeah, it's a real classic one. Oh, and you did so much Barks research for that one, too. You went all in there.
Thank you. Yes, and if you don't see it in your podcast app, just go to the What a Cartoon Libsyn page. It'll be there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you're looking for the back catalog, it'll always be on Libsyn, so don't worry about that.
Yeah, and I think in the Patreon app, if you just search, you can search within our page and just search DuckTales, and you'll see both us talk about the 2017 series episode and the mm-hmm. original one we did, too.
So you can hear all about, Carl Barks and the character, and at the beginning of the show on that podcast. So the issue with this episode is nobody cares about this movie. Mm-hmm. No one did any scholarship about this movie. Disney doesn't like to admit it exists until they had to, when they were putting everything on Disney Plus. Therefore, there is really nothing about this movie online except for like 2 interviews.
None of the people who worked on it get asked about it too, I would bet, because a lot of them worked on a, like, I saw Alan Burnett's name in there. I was like, if Alan Burnett even gave interviews, which he's not one who appears in most of the like Batman behind the scenes stuff, they're asking about Batman the Animated Series. They're not asking about the DuckTales movie no one remembers.
And to make a long story short, I'll tell the long story too. Make a long story short, this movie was made by season 2 and beyond DuckTales staff and then sent to France to animate. And that's essentially the story.
Oh, the French.
Yes.
Not to sound too dismissive of the many, talented animators that worked on this, I really wish they could have got TMS to do this theatrically, because
yes,
they did the whole series before.
Yes, and future movies of this caliber would be farmed out to Japanese studios, especially, the one that was established for Disney in Japan. So
right,
they weren't against that. But for this one, they started with a French studio, which would go on to do much better work with a Goofy movie. So much better.
Yeah, I mean, as a first film of a studio that you're out of the stumbling blocks no matter what you do. But But yeah, I think too that they had not yet established Walt Disney Animation Japan as their top side studio who could do the, I mean, we talked a ton about this in the Aladdin Return to Jafar podcast. Yeah.
So let's talk about Disney Movie Tunes. So this is the first Disney Movie Tune. This was later known as Disney Toon Studio. So this was a venture designed as an experiment to see if Disney could produce theatrical movies on a cheaper budget and also outside of Burbank.
You know, I can definitely see this as a kind of Eisner Katzenberg way of thinking, because they're so used to having all these Burbank nerds tell them, like, yeah, it has to cost this much.
Yeah. I mean, there are negatives and positives. I think the positive is they were like, don't be so precious about this. Like, just make, we need more content and people want more. We can't make one movie every 18 to 24 months.
Yeah. I mean, they want, you know, watching for other podcasts we've done on here, it was very important to Eisner, like in interviews, he go like, I want a yearly movie slate. Like, we need an annual animated film. And when you have these massive productions like Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast that take, you know, 5 years, it's a lot of groups working at the same time if you want a movie to come out each year.
So to facilitate all of this outsourcing, Disney set up studios in London, France, and Australia, and they had already established an animation studio in Japan. So all of these worldwide studios built for outsourcing their movies.
You know, we rarely ever cover European animation in here. I have to say that the rare English ones have been, I think, all stop motion. I think
Wallace Wind in the Willows, Wallace and Gromit. We have not done Banana Man yet.
Well, I'll do Danger Mouse before I do Banana Man.
I'm gonna be sending that one out there. That show gives me depression.
Come on, people say funny things every now and then.
So the only other movie tune to get a theatrical release in the 90s was a Goofy movie. Return of Jafar would be the next one, and by that point the video market was too lucrative to ignore.
I can't believe that after Return of Jafar they still did Goofy movie in theaters.
I don't know what the story is behind that, but that surprised me as well.
Yeah, in none of my research did I see why it wasn't. I mean, I think it was just always pegged as a theatrical film, and I could see that they went to, once they were animating in widescreen anyway, they're just like, let's just put it in the theater. Yeah.
So by the early 2000s, some of these were promoted to theatrical releases, I think mostly because Disney was pumping out some real duds like Atlantis and Home on the Range and Treasure Planet. They just needed something else in theaters to soak up that money.
Well, those Winnie the Pooh ones actually would get better reviews than Home on the Range or Atlantis then. So
yeah, some of the earliest ones were the Tigger movie and Return to Neverland, and these productions were unified under the banner of Disney Toon Studios by the time of the 2005 theatrical release Pooh's Heffalump movie.
Oh yes, I remember that Heffalump movie, that, you know, the positive reviews. I've seen great character animation from it, like guys like Bruce W. Smith animated on it, but when I see clips from it, I think like, wow, this is 10 times better than it needed to be. Like, I would assume Eisner internally was just like, just put out some more Winnie the Pooh stuff. Kids love these characters. It doesn't need to be anything.
All of the latter Pooh movies look really, really, really good.
Yeah, and kids just love Pooh.
Kids love Pooh. They love playing with it. They love seeing it on TV.
But kids really do love Winnie. It's one of their still highest selling characters they have that they sort of own.
So another long story short, there was a big reorganization of Disney after they bought Pixar in 2006. And then Disney Toon Studios worked as a unit within the renamed Walt Disney Feature Animation, which is now known as Walt Disney Animation Studios. So the closure of Disney Toon Studios is all wrapped up in the mess of John Lasseter leaving. So in June of 2018, it was announced the unit would cease to be, and their upcoming April 2019 release, directed by Clay Hall from King of the Hill, would be canceled. So,
oh damn!
Thanks to Lasseter leaving, all of these mix-ups happen, and that is when Disney Toon Studios closed. But from this movie to the end, I believe it was like a Planes movie or something. Tinkerbell was the last movie, some Tinkerbell sequel.
Right.
They made 47 movies.
That's incredible. Yeah. Like that, if this came out in 90, then they were working on it in 89, so that's seriously 30 years. Like 30 years of work they did and building up that much skill. It's so sad they got shut down, especially like Well, Disney wants to lay off lots of people these days, but they have more demand for content than ever. They got to keep feeding that beast with new stuff every week.
And it seems like Lasseter was the guy keeping it alive, because I don't see why else they would immediately close after Lasseter left.
Yeah, yeah. Which is funny, too, because when Lasseter got put in charge, lots of people thought he was just going to shut down all of the direct-to-video stuff, but sounded like he was convinced that, like, look, kids like these plane things. Kids want to watch, like, planes talking. You can admit that Cars is a shitty movie, but everybody loves it, so have planes do the same thing.
So yeah, that's a brief history of Disney movie tunes. So let's move on to the history of DuckTales the movie. So a lot of this comes from one article I found through a very rigorous search of the internet. So the Sci-Fi Wire article, DuckTales the Movie, Treasure of the Lost Lamp was a true Disney experiment. And they essentially talked to two people associated with the movie. But
two sources, I'd say. That's more than most people would do for their, like, hey, let's remember a cartoon website memories.
But that's all I could find. There's no, like, Blu-ray with a commentary or anything like that. There are no other interviews. Nobody wants to talk about this movie. So let's go over DuckTales really quickly. DuckTales, very popular. It shows all of its original 65 episodes across the fall of 87. So the last one to air is January 1st, 88. They just spill all 65 in 3 months. Incredible waste, but, you know, that's what the market was back then.
Yeah, it was direct to syndication, 5 episodes a week, and in once it's out, then you replay them again. You do it 4 times a year, and that's your syndication packet. It is so wasteful when now everything is, like, especially on Disney Plus, they're like, no, each week a new episode. Let's tease it out.
So something interesting was that before this movie, DuckTales had also had 3 other movies, if you think about it. So the original DuckTales 5-part pilot aired as a movie, right?
Right, right.
And of course, it's renewed for a second season of 30 episodes. So there's a difference here in what they do compared to the first season. Broadcast season two is 2 movies that are later split up into 5-week-long episode broadcasts. So
right.
Season 2 is 2 DuckTales movies. So before Treasure of the Lost Lamp, they have written 3 DuckTales movies.
Man, probably an hour count longer than the 70-minute movie we're talking about today.
For sure. And I think the Season 2 movies introduced things like Gizmo Duck and Bubba Duck.
Oh, man, the Gizmo Duck. Those were, I think, some of the first multi-part things I ever watched as a kid. And they stressed me out because I had been watching Batman, and I knew about 1 episode cliffhangers, or Rocky and Bullwinkle. But to see this over 5 episodes, like, I remember being so stressed out that the Beagle Boys had finally stolen his money by freezing it in a lake, and they were getting, I was like, oh, poor Scrooge. Like, in this movie as a kid, when Scrooge's money turns into volcanic goo, I was so heartbroken for Scrooge. Like, all his money, oh, poor Scrooge.
But if you were a kid in 19 in the late 80s who would watch 3 DuckTales movies in prime time, you were ready for another one. But also, that made it not as special, because you had already seen 3 DuckTales movies, not just seen them, but seen them at home for free.
Yeah, it's true. And then in scale, you'd seen their biggest adventures. Like, oh, what kind of great adventure will McDuck get into? Like, well, we kind of saw that. We saw him battle over who had the most money with, that was another one that really stressed me out, him. It was the weighing of the money and who had the most money of him against his great rival.
But yeah, that's something I didn't consider, and I didn't realize until I did this research, where there had been 3 movies. And I mean, technically they were movies. They were later split up into episodes. That's how most of us experienced them. But I think that accounts for the lackluster box office response, because this was not special to people anymore. And you know what? It didn't look better than the TV episodes.
Yeah, yeah. And I would also guess that people were still, parents were thinking, like, you watch that on TV all the time. I'm not taking you.
We have DuckTales at home.
Exactly, yeah.
So let's talk about the French animation studio responsible for this movie. Very good, Henry. So in 1989, Disney purchases the, I'm going to say, Breezy Brothers Animation Studio. And before establishing their own studio, these two French brothers directed the 1985 French feature. Okay, what famous French character do you think is in this animated movie?
Oh,
I'll give you one guess.
Is it Lupin, the original?
No, it's Asterisk.
Oh, of course it's Asterisk.
It's the only French character.
All right.
If you ever took French, they would put like 3 Asterix cartoons in every book.
That's true. Yeah, I only knew Asterix as like, oh, that's the picture of, when I think of foreign cartoons, I think of Asterix, I think of Tintin, and I think of Smurfs. Yeah. Those are the 3 I think of.
So yes, they directed the 1985 French feature Asterix versus Caesar, And then before being purchased by Disney, their studio produced the international Babar animated series and movie. So that's what they did right before the DuckTales movie.
I really liked those as a kid. I remember it was from like a free weekend of Showtime or HBO, one of those that aired it, the series and the first movie. And as a kid, I really loved it. I couldn't understand the extreme like racist colonialism of it, but it's just like, oh, it's just a cool elephant. I'm a little boy. Just
I watched
like
that on HBO. I don't know if it's on HBO Max. Are they showing Babar?
I should check that out. I feel like Babar's canceled now.
So by 94, Walt Disney Animation France was working for the features department, playing major roles in such things as, surprise, surprise, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Disney France was all over that.
Of course.
Also, Tarzan and Fantasia 2000, they were like just working on the feature movies at that point.
Okay, they really went a long way from this early movie tunes then. Gee.
And also a Goofy movie as well. They were a major player in that. So here's how the production worked. It was storyboarded in Burbank, then sent to France for layout and animation, and then the cells were sent to Pacific Rim Animation in China. I looked them up. Very little is known about them, but they were cell painters on things like the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. Ooh. And Rockadoodle.
All right.
So known for being cheap. Not even going to Korea, but going to China.
I will say, watching this in 4K... the cell paints, it's not what you expect from, say, The Little Mermaid, one of the last, like, Disney ones on cells, or Beauty and the Beast. Like, this is cheap cells on this.
And this is the last Disney feature to use cells, because the feature to come out in November, The Rescuers Down Under, used the cap system.
Right.
So this is the final cell-painted Disney feature.
Oh, man, what a way to go out. The cell painting on it, I get the outsourcing, like everything on DuckTales got outsourced, but if you've got the French studio, you're still doing the ink and paint in China, like, and at a deekist place, like, you, Disney can afford better than the guys that deek uses.
They want it to be cheap, I guess. Yeah. And some brief trivia about this. I'm basically scraping together every fact I can get about this. So the poster for this movie is great. It's done by Drew Struzan, who did the Indiana Jones posters. And the president of Walt Disney TV Animation was a guy named Gary Kreisel, who was obsessed with Indiana Jones, and he commissioned that poster. And it put it together in my mind. In the Tailspin episode, we were saying every 80s Disney show is Indiana Jones inspired, and it's because of him.
Wow, that 100% makes sense now. Yeah, and the poster's great. It's a great poster. Like, it looks great on a VHS box too. Man, they were such... Paramount released those films. They were in such Indiana Jones envy at Disney. I mean, also too, that, like, you know, Eisner...
Yeah.
That's how his friendship with Lucas began, is because he was the guy who greenlit the Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it was a big deal for Eisner to get the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland. And it's still one of their best rides. I love that ride.
Oh, it's great. I rode it so many times a little over a year ago.
Though it is my... reminder of, like, as I get older, I'm like, boy, my back hurts more and more the older I get on this
I'm
ride.
Losing more and more of my keys with every ride.
I can never wear my glasses on it, unfortunately.
You're missing out on so much.
I know that big blur is a giant snake. I know.
So one of the producers was upset about the poster because it seemed to be promising more than the movie was delivering. He was saying, this is about ducks. It's not about Indiana Jones. We're promising too much here.
Yeah, I guess it sort of does do that. I mean, once they get out of the desert, it's just a lot more interior adventures. And I mean, I've got some real complaints about how skeletorized Murloc gets in this. I had my scary child memories of Murloc. Watching him in this, I'm like, this guy's a goober.
I was a coward. So yeah, that is essentially all I could scrape together about it, but I have some more info about the movie itself.
Okay.
Let's talk about who made this movie. So written by Alan Burnett, not really known for DuckTales, but we can go over a brief history of him. Actually, the most recent episode of What a Cartoon as of this recording is Freakazoid. He wrote Dexter's Date.
That's right. Yeah, he was in the original set of writers for it when it was a Dini show or when it was a Tim show. And so they just had his leftover superhero sketch for that one.
And he is also one of the creators of Batman Beyond, which we'll also be talking about in this month. You might have heard that already.
Yeah, he is a key part of the DCAU. I think he was seen as this old hand by 1991. So when Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski pitched the show at Warner Animation, they just didn't trust them. They were brand new. They'd never run a show before. They get this old hand like Alan Burnett and put him in charge to run it. And he definitely helped them hammer stuff out. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't the, like, I'm sure he likes Batman just fine, but he didn't have the drive to be like, finally, the greatest Batman show. He was more just the captain of the ship, I'd say.
And he was also the writer behind our first What a Cartoon Movie subject, Batman Mask of the Phantasm,
written
by Alan Burnett. That movie has nothing in common with this movie, by the way.
No affairs from Scrooge's life coming back.
I wish. So I think he must have transitioned to Warner Brothers after doing a little bit of work on Tailspin, because after that, he was story editor on Batman the Animated Series. And that's where he made a name for himself. And then basically just being a producer on every Warner thing after that until now.
I mean, to build up Warner TV Animation, they pilfered a lot of people from Disney because they were ahead. I mean, if you're Warner and you got the money, you see that Disney's beating you on TV, you hire as many people away from Disney as you can and you beat them at their own game.
And Alan Burnett, also writer of 60 episodes of The Smurfs.
Oh, right. Yes. That's where you learn to grind it out. If you can make it out of that alive of writing a million episodes of Smurf, like, well, what's Brainy do this time? What annoying thing will he say this time?
You got a dartboard? Let's figure it out.
Did we do one about Smurfette's muffins yet?
Is that innuendo? We'll find out. So a lot of Smurf DNA in this because it's directed by Bob Hathcott. So
Hathcock?
He might at this point. He's still alive. What a Cartoon Worlds Are Colliding, because Bob Hathcock is the co-director of the episode of Duckman we covered last year.
Whoa! Yes. Wow. I did not. He's a duck master, this guy.
And so I'll borrow my own history of him from that episode. So his first directing credit I could find is from 1982. He directed an episode of the Little Rascals cartoon series.
Ugh.
He did a ton of work on the Smurfs, and he is credited with directing 86 segments of its 417 segment run.
Good
and
Lord.
Also story director for a number of years on the show.
Wow. Wowie, wow, wow. Yeah. So, and Hanna-Barbera pumping out. They were the Smurf factories of the 80s. It was them selling all their old stuff to USA Cartoon Express and making all hands on deck for Smurfs, and anything that was like Smurfs they could sell to other networks that were like, hey, ABC's got all these Smurfs, can you sell us Snorks? All right.
They're kind of like Smurfs.
Yeah.
They're underwater Smurfs.
Yeah, Smurf, Snork, kids won't know the difference. They're stupid.
So after being the supervising director of the 1988 Garbage Pail Kids series that never aired in America, he moved to Disney, where he was supervising director on later episodes of DuckTales and later directed 10 episodes of Aladdin.
Okay, all right. A good lifer in the TV animation minds. I'm glad he actually got to move up to primetime later in his career.
And then he eventually joined Klasky Csupo, where he would direct a few episodes of Duckman and things like Santa Bogito and Jumanji.
Oh, okay. All right. Good for him. The Klasky Csupo, you know, they need all the experienced guys they can get when they were really ramping up production with like five or six shows concurrently. I can't believe they were that big at one
time. They had an empire. Now they're an empty building that we walked by several times a few years ago.
That's so sad to me. It's like, how do you burn all of that? How do you lose it all?
Well,
like that?
You produced 80 pilots that don't get sold.
I guess so, man.
That's what happens.
They lost their like one friend at Viacom. Like there was a change in management and the rest of the guys at Viacom, like, new number, who's this? That's what they said to Gabor.
So Bob Hathcock, his most recent thing he did was being a supervising producer on the Big Hero 6 TV series that just got canceled.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, things go for 5 years in Disney and then they just ended. I mean, I'll talk about it more, but the DuckTales 2017 show, but the finale will have aired by the end of this month. We haven't watched it yet. I just watched the fourth to last episode of the show.
It's funny. I saw a promo image for Big Hero 6, the cartoon, and I was like, oh, did they just announce a cartoon? I was like, oh, no, there has been a cartoon for 3 years and it's over now. That's how fast time moves.
There's literally at least 100 episodes of Spider-Man cartoons Disney's made in the last decade that I haven't watched. Like, they produce too many things. It's more than one child can handle. I wish when I was a kid, and I actually could have spent my 8 hours a day watching TV seeing all of these things, you know?
You could watch 8 hours a day and see all new content.
Yes, yeah, my youth was wasted. I could have spent so many of my hours better watching television.
I didn't have to watch the entire run of Full House 13 times. I could have spread that around.
Are all those Smurf episodes waiting for something new to come on? Like,
disgusting.
It's another Smurfs. Like, I celebrated when an Alf Tall Tales came on because it was at least Alf, my good buddy Alf.
A special treat. Let's talk about the composer for this movie, David Newman. If you want a movie-ass movie score, you go to David David Newman, he'll give you one, because his first score for an animated feature was The Brave Little Toaster, but other scores he made were for movies with not notable music, but just, you know, big splashy comedies usually. So I'll only list his 90s work because he has too many movies according to his IMDb. So his 90s work and partial 80s work. So the first two Bill and Ted movies, Coneheads, Tommy Boy, Jingle All the Way, Bowfinger, Galaxy Quest, and so many more.
Wow.
And he will also be scoring the upcoming West Side Story remake coming in December of 2021. All you Ansel Elgort fans,
oh dear,
hold on to your seats. This is truly the year of Elgort.
You Elgorters can have my seat. I give it up to you guys. All those movies you listed, when I think of their music, I just think like, well, yeah, it's there. It sounds like I'm watching a movie. When Tommy Boy like crashes a car or whatever, it's like burp, 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 burp. Like
it's a movie ass movie score. He makes like movie nougat. It holds it all together.
It's good filler. When you hear it in the background, it doesn't take you out of it and make you think like, oh, I'm watching something silly. You're like, no, this is a movie. It's not just a sketch from television turned into a movie.
It doesn't stand out in any way, but it's just there to support the action on the screen. It's not, they're not remarkable scores, but they just do their job.
Yeah, I mean, the score Galaxy Quest, as I recall, it's like, yeah, it's a good, you know, version of a Star Trek movie score.
So let's talk about the voice cast. So we covered everybody in the original episode. So since that, Russi Taylor has passed away.
Aww.
She passed away, I think, a few months after we covered that episode. So, of course, Russi Taylor is all over this playing Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
And Webby.
And Webby. I forgot about Webby.
Yeah. She's half of the cast, actually.
With those crazy voices only she could do.
Oh, God. I'm not looking forward to any of the clips in this. It's just like, oh, which kid is talking? You have to have the screen in front of you, because Huey, Dewey, and Louie just talk in a row, which I think we said it on the previous time we talked about DuckTales, but when Barks wrote the comics, the kids would often talk as a chorus. Like they were
just one word bubble coming out of all three of them.
Barks treated them as incredibly interchangeable.
I'm just thinking Russi Taylor and Rip Taylor in the same movie. What are the odds?
Oh, man. Did they do a 23andMe at some point?
I bet they're related. So we know who played the genie in the movie. Here's a brief account by David Vimers, who played a major creative role in the TV series and was the voice director of the film. So here is what he says about who could have played the genie. Quotes, I called Jeffrey and I said, I want Robin Williams to be the voice of the genie. Jeffrey said, I think that's a terrific idea. I'll start working with Robin's manager and I'll get back to you. A few days passed without word, so Vimers called Katzenberg in for an update, informing Vimers that he was in talks with Williams' team. A few days after that, with still no word on whether Williams would be heading to Duckburg, Vimers again called Katzenberg, and suddenly Vimers said, Jeffrey isn't taking my calls. So, Robin Williams could have played this genie in this movie.
Wow. Okay. That answers a big question I had, because when we did the Aladdin podcast, you talked a lot about how long production, lots of bumps. It was in production when this film released, for sure. And so I just wonder, like, okay, internally, what is Katzenberg thinking with having this genie film that also has like an evil bearded guy who wants to steal the lamp? I mean, what are they? It's such similar parallel styles. I wonder what they're thinking about there.
Yeah, it's so strange how this movie has so much in common with Aladdin and they're only 2 years apart. Mm-hmm. And of course, Katzenberg did not steal the idea for Aladdin. That was come up with independently by, I believe, the animation team.
Sure,
who animated a scene of the genie to Williams hoping they could get him.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I think it put the seed in Katzenberg's brain, like, no, this could work.
Yeah, I at the very least think that request to get Robin Williams as a crazy genie nudged him farther to like, yeah, we should get this guy. But yeah, I mean, Aladdin has been made into 8 million cartoons. Aladdin cartoons are almost as old as cartoons themselves.
Yeah, like Popeye was doing it in the 30s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember watching this. I think I rented it after Aladdin came out, and I was talking to my stepdad, like, isn't it weird there's another Disney movie with a wacky genie?
Right? Yeah.
I don't understand. This is strange.
And maybe that's another reason they never wanted to re-release this, because it's like, this genie seems so crap compared to Genie from Aladdin.
And listen, I'm sure Rip Taylor was a great guy, lots of fun, but I don't get it. I really don't get it. I mean, I was looking up, like, what is he famous for? Well, he was an entertainer. like a Las Vegas entertainer.
Yeah.
And he was very famous on the game show circuit in the 70s, but I was not alive during that time.
I knew him as Buddy Cole would hang out with him in one episode of Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
So I watched this in 90, and then once I got around to watching Kids in the Hall reruns, they get to, I believe it was the Buddy Cole Christmas special, Rip Taylor appears in that. I was like, oh, that's the guy.
And that's like a full episode sketch, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah. Rip Taylor, he works for the 70s and 80s of like, he appears on a talk show and throws confetti at Johnny Carson or whatever, and everybody like kind of jokes like, boy, you're pretty effeminate, aren't you? And it's just, he was part of like five different homosexuals who got to be on TV in the 70s and just winking at the idea of like, this guy is gay, huh? Pretty crazy.
And I think he would wear like a sequin suit, and he had a big bushy mustache and would just throw confetti at people.
Yes, yeah. He would have like a confetti wand. I remember. Well, also, I know you didn't watch the Jackass films, Bob, but...
I would never.
But at the end of the first Jackass movie, he appears out of nowhere and he's like, oh, it's the end of the movie. Oh, and he's like, oh, it's over. And he kind of like throws a bunch of confetti, and then like in his frustration he also like takes off his wig and just reveals his giant bald head. He's like, ah, these kids in their movie. It's Rip Taylor was in on the joke of who he was, and I think he seemed like a fun guy. If he did anything cancelable, I am not aware of it, but he worked through the 70s. It's quite possible.
I just didn't live through the 70s, and apparently that thing about him throwing the confetti came from something he did on the Merv Griffin show where he was bombing, so he was tearing up his index cards and like throwing them around like confetti. So that became his bit based on him bombing on the Merv Griffin show.
Wow. See, these guys become people to the generation of comedy nerds before us, because I've heard the stories of like on Freaks and Geeks commentaries, Judd Apatow and Paul Feig talked about that they'd watch Merv Griffin after school every day because that's where comedians like Gary Shandling would appear on. So you keep tuning in to see funny comedians because you had no other place to watch comedians. Mm. And you'd eventually see all of the regulars like Rip Taylor who'd appear on the show. But
that's why that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer rebuilds the Merv Griffin set in his apartment. I just found that confusing. I'm like, I've never heard or have seen this show before. Is this a real person?
Now we're the generation forcing that upon people who are just like, what, DuckTales? What's this thing?
It would be a Chevy Chase show set in my apartment.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Yeah, you should have just having a piano in your desk is a smart move in general.
So yeah, he is very Rip Taylor in this role, and the famous tagline
Shabooey
was not being said around schoolyards when I was in them.
It really is sweaty. It wants to be. They said I think I rejected it as a kid because I was like, I wasn't on board with Quackaroony already. So then throwing Shabooey at me, I was like, no way. But
this
but I
was
still liked him.
This was the summer of The Simpsons, too.
Oh,
we had
yeah.
our catchphrases. They all involved words like hell and damn.
You're right. You know, man, the turn from 89 to 90 feels very hard to me. Like, it's a hard line of like, no, the 90s have now started. 80s over, guys. No more 80s. And that, sadly, DuckTales, I think, was a casualty.
It really
of that.
Is a product of the 80s.
Yeah. I think two Tiny Toons appears in 1990. It makes Ooh. DuckTales seem very old.
Yes, it'll be showing up in just a month. This is like August of 1990? Yeah, August 3rd, 1990.
Wow, man. And yes, the inundation of Tiny Toons is a month away. Probably the ads have already started for it on TV, and the t-shirts are showing up
at
Target.
The merch showed up first for that show. And of course, the other big guest in this is Christopher Lloyd as Murlock. And Lloyd was well on his way to pivoting to being a kids movie star, because mm-hmm. Back to the Future trilogy had just wrapped up. The third movie opened in May.
Wow.
So he was just fresh off of that.
Man, I can't wait to talk about that podcast, or that on a podcast soon, too.
Very soon. Yeah. And I mean, he would be doing Adam's Family after that. I just rewatched it over Halloween. It's amazing. He's so good in it.
I didn't know that was Christopher Lloyd as a kid. I think by mid-90, I don't think I'd seen the Back to the Future stuff. I did see the third movie in theaters, but I guess I still didn't connect the two. I probably saw them within the same summer. Like, I bet...
I did. I definitely did.
I remember seeing Back to the Future Part 3 at, like, a dollar theater, because it was still... that's where it was left. So that had to be, like, June, and then I would have seen this in August or September. So, yeah, But I didn't connect it, like, because he is doing a voice. He's not doing his Doc voice.
Yeah.
He's doing his scary voice. voice.
And he would be in other animated stuff like Anastasia. Yeah. He was no stranger to animation.
Oh, yeah. And I actually, 2 years before, he terrified me in Roger Rabbit.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, he had haunted my nightmares in that.
I mean, that's really all there is to this history because, again, Disney just threw it on Disney Plus just to give you more content and nobody cares about it. It's not critically loved. Even back at the time, people were like, ooh, this Dijon guy, not good.
Well, yeah. I mean, Dijon, I guess we talk about him a little bit, that it is hardly the first Arab stereotype in a cartoon. I think it came right at the end of when people weren't sensitive about that. I think by the end of the 90s, Disney might have gotten enough notes of like, hey, we shouldn't. Beauty and the Beast totally reflects that they did hear the complaints of Ariel's just like this dumb girl who does whatever a man tells her to do. Mm. So they create Belle to not be that and to be her own independent woman. So I would think they maybe Aladdin does not have as bad a stereotype as Dijon in it.
But when you're doing Indiana Jones stuff, you often are relying on tropes that, you know, on surface level seem, oh, fun characters. But then when you dig deeper, you're like, oh, this is not a good depiction of these people.
Yes, you're right. When you're pulling from serials of the 40s, those are steeped in Orientalism and other stereotypings of people in faraway lands. Like, I mean, especially like, I almost feel like in this film, they knew that people were complaining that, oh, Uncle Scrooge just goes places and steals their shit. And so they had to give him, in the movie, he says what, when Indy says, oh, it's a museum. I'm not stealing this for myself.
And then people pay me to go to the museum.
Yeah, yeah. But
nice and legal.
The actor, I believe, is a son of Italian immigrants. So he's, after watching it, my husband was like, okay, was this a white guy playing this role? And so I looked up the late actor who played him, and he's a son of Italian immigrants, so Mediterranean area, but he is certainly not of Arab descent.
Yeah, and this movie did not even make back its $20 million budget.
Ouch.
I think because, no offense to the French studio, but it's rough. This movie's a rough-looking movie. Mm. Certain scenes are looking better than others, but this was their first big movie that they were completely in charge of, and obviously, you know, working with an American part of the company, which, you know, language barrier, stuff like that, and, you know, you couldn't just like upload your scenes to the internet and have them be downloaded in Burbank. So
yeah.
I think they had to get used to that pipeline to make a better movie with a goofy movie. But yeah, this one is just pretty rough and often looks much worse than the TMS episodes of DuckTales.
Yeah, well, and Goofy Movie built around like big moments that are definitely like trailer moments. There's not a lot of trailer moments in this film. And also as a kid, I was a little bothered at how much the cast got pared down. Like, Gizmo Duck ain't in this thing.
Oh, yeah. This is like season one OG DuckTales cast.
Yeah, yeah. That upset me a bit as a kid, too, where I missed those characters. I wasn't like, Mom, there's no Gizmo Duck. But back then, I liked Gizmo Duck. It was once I saw Darkwing like a year or two later, and Darkwing hates Gizmo Duck. I was like, yeah, I'm on your side, Darkwing. Gizmo Duck's full of himself. F this guy.
See, I think most kids are pedantic like that because they don't have a mastery of anything except for the shows they like, and they want to have the Bible for the show in their head. So when something is on the screen that's not reflective of that, they get upset. I remember watching the Ninja Turtles movie, and although I enjoyed it, I was like, well, why are all these things different?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think when people think, ah, kids are dumb, they don't care, I cared. I was there. I was asking, where is Gizmo Duck?
Again, the kids today, though, they watch the Boss Baby movie, and then on Netflix, the Boss Baby TV show continues it directly.
And they go to bed in their Boss Baby sheets.
All the video games now, too. If they're a tie-in video game, they have some explanation that makes it go like, oh, on Wikipedia, it says this is where the video game takes place. Like, they get more explanations now. Like, but I mean, yeah, when this came out, I had also played the DuckTales video game. I even had that crappy DuckTales sort of like edutainment game for my computer that I could not fully understand. But it was like, oh, we have to go to Columbia for something, find the jaguar in the picture.
So it was like Carmen Sandiego but with Scrooge.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
And it was really hard to control the sun chaser. I remember the plane, which maybe that actually was to make it accurate to how a launch pad flies around.
You are launch pad in DuckTales the PC game.